Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Violent protests erupted Monday night after it was announced that a grand jury that spent months examining the case in Ferguson, Missouri, decided not to indict the white officer Darren Wilson in the death of Michael Brown, a teenager who was black and unarmed. Wilson's lawyers say they believe the jury's decision was right and note that officers often must make, quote, split-second and difficult decisions, yet protests and responses around the country would suggest there's a lot of disappointment, anger, and disapproval of how the case was handled from start to finish. Regardless, the event has elevated national conversation about race and race relations in this country, as well as drawing attention to how we police the police. And now we want to hear from you. Let's talk about how this case is affecting our country. I'm particularly interested in if somebody is coming from a diverse background, somebody who wants to speak to how it feels to be on that side of the microphone here. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also get in touch with us online. You can just write us at voxpop@wamc.org. Well, the phones, there's one free phone, and I want to just say one thing. The one thing we got to do here is to be civil. If you're not going to be civil, don't call. Let's go to Charles in Lenox. Hi, Charles. Are you civil?
Yes, I am civil, and I am here.
Great. All good.
Yes, I have a question, actually. I understand that the U.S. Justice Department is investigating whether or not the police officer who shot Michael Brown might be guilty of violating the young man's civil rights. If he is found guilty of this, do you know what the potential penalties or other ramifications?
No, Charles, I don't, and maybe somebody will call in and say, but I can tell you this much, you're absolutely right. That is something that could happen. I think it's unlikely, but I think it could happen, and it's happened before. When a jury obviously biased to something on a state level comes up with a decision that the Justice Department wants to deal with, it has. So you're right. I'm sorry. I wish I knew the answer to how long you could serve in jail as a result of it, but I'm assuming it could be a while. Charles, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We have one free phone now because Charles is off, and we've got a Scott in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Scott, you're on.
Yes, Alan. How are you?
So far, so good. Don't ruin it.
I won't. I have an issue also with the consequence. How come there's no consequence for any of these people that are looting and starting all of these fires? The troubling factor for me is how we can go and police all these other countries and have no issues controlling the people, and we seem like we've done nothing over there or very little. I don't know how much help that they have from the federal government on this issue in terms of deploying the National Guard. I'm not sure what's even involved in deploying
the state would call out the National Guard in this case. The feds can do it. Eisenhower did it, you may remember, in Little Rock, but the state can do that. But I want to talk to you about your original premise here, Scott. And that is that I think 29 people, as I was watching very early this morning, had been arrested. I also think there's an awful lot of videotape. I was astounded. I saw one in which really was very troublesome, in which a man and a woman had baseball bats. And there were they cracked the windows, the front windows of the store, and then they walked in and systematically came out with box after box after box of liquor, with no effort to shield their faces. One has to assume that, you know, the authorities can take notice of that. But I do know that a number of arrests were made.
Yes, I agree. It's just the mass destruction over there. It seems like it's completely out of control, and I don't know, but I would think that the area knew whether or not there was going to be an indictment, or at least they had a really good idea.
Sure.
Whether or not, you know, so they knew this was coming.
Sure.
Is my guess, and they also knew the size of the problem that they were going to have, because they had it before. So they knew it was going to be at least that size.
Right.
So to now come out and say that they would need 10,000 police officers in order to control this, no, well, that might be a little bit of a fictitious number, but knowing that it was going to be at that magnitude, why weren't they more prepared for this? That's my question.
Okay, it's a question which I'm sure some of your colleagues will call in and answer. I'll take one fast crack at it, and that is that the last thing they wanted to do was to make it worse. So they figured, I think they figured, incorrectly or not, and the basic premise of your question is on this, that it's better to let them burn it than to get into a full-scale battle there. You know, Scott, I remember Tiananmen Square. You remember that? They let them get away with it forever and ever and ever, and finally in comes. So I don't think it has to do with whether it's in China or America. I'm quite worried, by the way, that when it comes to security versus civil rights, security in the end in this country, which is a fairly conservative country, will always win. What do you think?
That's a tough one, but I suppose in some ways I cannot disagree with that.
Yeah. Okay, Scott, yeah. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. All right?
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, bye. Let's go to Denise in Saugerties. Denise, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Thank you.
Sure.
I really don't want to focus on the planned violence, which is called why you hold a press conference in the evening. I really want to congratulate the students at SUNY New Paltz who demonstrated last night.
Right.
200 of them came out, and then at classes across the board on the campus, they held a 45-second moment of silence, symbolizing the 4.5 hours that Mike Brown's body laid in the street, and then held impromptu teach-ins on the campus, which was really good. I'm a product of the 60s movement, and, you know, I teach it at New Paltz now that I'm an elderly person, but it was good to see students actually paying attention to the news. I've had classes where only 2 students even looked at the news, ever.
What do you teach, Denise? What do you teach?
Anthropology.
Gotcha.
And women's studies.
Okay.
I know you have a tundra for New Paltz. So.
I love New Paltz. I mean, it's the place that sort of gave me my grounding, and I can't tell you how much I think of the school and of the administration and the people who were there. Hey, Denise, thank you for reminding me. I want to get to everybody, if you don't mind terribly. So I appreciate your call and your attaboy for New Paltz.
I wanted to add one more thing. You know, the National Bar Association has issued a statement, and they are appalled by the lack of the indictment. I think that you should take a look at it online. And the data put up by Nate Silver, who does all of the statistical stuff for the New York Times.
No, he did, but he doesn't anymore. He did. No. He's on his own now. Yeah.
No, I know. Well, yeah. He was on his own before, but Nate came up with data of 162,000 cases pursued by U.S. attorneys, only 11 failed to return indictments. And the Bar Association has said that this is a gross miscarriage.
Well, it was Saul Wachtler who said that a prosecutor could get a ham sandwich indicted.
Sandwich,
yeah.
Right.
Denise, we thank you for
good
calling.
Alan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, hosting a holiday open house December 6th and 7th with holiday dish gardens, plants, and bulbs, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sunday, 9 to 4. Closed Thanksgiving Day, storiesnursery.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors. Serving the Northeast since 2001, stonesoupconcrete.com and on Facebook. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. RhinebeckArt.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Interim Healthcare, offering support for families during the holidays and year-round with companions, aides, or nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day. Serving the Capital Region, Saratoga Counties, Glens Falls, and Columbia, interimhealthcare.com. And Washington County Tourism and the towns and villages therein, featuring museums, art venues, farmers markets, specialty shops for holidays and gift certificates, washingtonnycounty.com.
And we are back. Thank you, Zachary. Very much want to talk to all of you about what happened in Ferguson. There are two free phones right now, so use them. 1-800-348-2551. Margie from Olive Bridge. Welcome back, Margie.
Hiya, Alan. How are you?
So far, so good.
Good. I'm happy to hear that. I wanted to address a point that a previous caller had made about, I'll just tell you what my point is. I thought it was curious that the prosecutor chose to release a statement late at night, you know, at 8:30 at night.
Right.
I thought it was possibly setting things up, and it made me wonder. You said before that first they wanted to minimize any problems, and that sort of made me wonder: do they really want to minimize the response? If they did, there were a number of things that they could have done to have the news received
Margie, I'm gonna cut you off. Stay on the line because your cell phone contact is so bad that we're having trouble hearing you. However, I do get the gist of the question. It's the most asked question of all. How come they did it last night? Instead of Sunday afternoon and Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. In other words. Would the consequences, the terrible consequences of the writing and everything else, have been mitigated if you had done it at an earlier time or at a different daylight time? I know that some of the answers we've been getting are that the kids were in school and during the day, and you didn't want this thing to explode while they were in danger. Also, I have a feeling Thanksgiving may have played into it. Something that simple, Margie, coming up, and the grand jurors wanted to go home. If they had said, okay, we're going to give you our decision sealed, but open it up on Sunday, it would have leaked out. One of those grand jurors or another would have talked about it. But I think I take from your question whether you're suggesting, is this possible, that the prosecutor was setting it up so that there were riots?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Thank you, Margie. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it a lot.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Let's go to Phil in Amherst. Phil, go ahead.
Hi. There's one fact that nobody seems to have brought up yet. The fact that the looting and rioting happened on the black side of town, and the police were guarding shops and businesses on the white side of town. So that's why there was so much looting and rioting going on. Not that the police were stopping it. They were stopping the people that were in the white part of town. Yeah, they were arresting them, but they weren't bothering anything that was going on the side of town they didn't care about.
So that's your take?
Yeah, it's not just my take. It's what Amy Goodman was interviewing people there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Phil. Appreciate that very much.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, right. Let's go to Bill in Albany. Bill in Albany, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Hey.
I think social Darwinism is alive and well in Ferguson, Missouri. I watched the presentation last night by D.A. McCullough. And I also watched the presentation by Governor Dixon. And I was watching Mayor Slay, St. Louis mayor, in the background. And the mayor of St. Louis, he had this smirk on his face. And I thought
that's funny, Bill. I want to be honest with you. I watched him too. I thought the mayor did very well, and I did not see a smirk on his face. What I'm worried about here is that many people will project into anybody, a smirk or a downside that maybe they didn't have.
That's your opinion. Versus
yes, it
mine.
Is. That's right. That's right. Yeah.
There just seems to be a certain arrogance, especially by McCullough, the presentation. He wasn't, like, talking to the people, you know, addressing them, like, in a humanistic sort of way. Mm-hmm. He's just reading this text. And even before he finished and said that there weren't going to be any charges, there are innuendos throughout his speech, if you will.
Like what? Bill?
Oh, he counteracts some of the witnesses. There were six witnesses who said that they saw Michael Brown's hands in the air, and then he contradicted that. Now maybe during the grand jury testimony, they found that the witnesses may have been lying or exaggerated. But there are innuendos like that I said to my wife, they're not going to charge him.
Okay, wait a second. Bill, you started with a very exciting concept, which was that social Darwinism was alive and well. Why social Darwinism?
I just returned from the city mission where I donated some material,
right,
or if you will, for Thanksgiving. I'm not looking for a slap in the back, but I just see in this country, and now I'm going to talk politics with the Tea Party. I just see this certain arrogance that well-to-do people have towards, you know, if you want to call them the downtrodden or formerly middle-class people who have lost their jobs. And it used to be, I think, in the old days, so to speak, and I'm up there with you in age, at least the politicians, et cetera, would try to hide what they're doing. Now it's almost in your face. What are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, Bill, thank you. A lot of people behind you appreciate your very interesting call. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah. Let's go to Lily in Amherst. Okay, Lily, you're on.
Hi. I'm a college in Amherst. I go to UMass. I've just been really upset by this whole process since the beginning, since I learned about it over the summer. And I would encourage people.
Could you speak up, Lily? I'm sorry. Could you just speak up a little bit?
I'm a little nervous.
That's okay. Don't be nervous. We really want to hear what you have to say.
I would encourage people, specifically young people and people of all racial backgrounds, to examine the institutionalized racism that is really prevalent in this country and the fact that, I mean, this is an issue that extends really deeply into things like our prison system and poverty correlating with race. And it's just been very, very unsettling to have conversations surrounding issues like this that have deviated from the really true ugly quality, which is that this is the fact that people have less privilege.
Lily, I only want to move along. I tell you right now, I truly believe that everything you said today is correct. I believe there is institutional racism. I believe there is classism and related to racism. I believe in poverty. You know that if you've ever heard me, you know, on the radio. But the question in this particular case is, how do you correlate? I know that you're bothered by this discussion, but how do you correlate what happened to one person, especially if it turns out that he really did rob the cigarillos and did beat up the police officer? Suppose that happened. How do you correlate that with the institutional racism in this?
Well, I'm just thinking right now about, the fact that this is happening on a fairly daily basis, and the shooting that happened in Ohio yesterday of the young man that was holding a BB gun that supposedly looked real. I mean, it's disproportionate, really, in the incidences that it happens. And I just think that it's definitely an observation that needs to be made.
Well, you made it, Lily. You made it. I thank you. There are a lot of people behind you, and I really want to congratulate you on how cogent you are today. Thanks very much for being with
us. Thank you, Alan. Have a happy holiday.
Yeah, you too. Let's go to Brack. Is it Bruce? Oh, Bruce in Kingston. Bruce, you're on.
Yeah. I'd like to make, and I'm glad you're doing this, by the way, right on target. I'd like to make a number of salient points. Everybody talks about institutional racism But all this came out of constitutional racism because originally, you know, they weren't allowed to vote in spite of, you know, the fact that, you know, that's taken place. It's under assault. So that's one point. The second point is there's been such a pattern for so many years of this kind of thing going on of black men, young black men, usually very often teenagers, being shot by policemen, that every time it happens, no matter how different it is, and the circumstances are always different, it's going to be folded in. It's going to be folded in, and it's going to be heightened. And, you know, a great American, Oliver Wendell Holmes, believe it or not, Oliver Wendell Holmes said, when people are hungry, they spell evolution with an R. Well, when people are shot, they also spell evolution with an R. Now, when Victor Hugo wrote Les Miserables, Jean Valjean stole a loaf of bread and had to spend half his life as a galley slave.
Yep.
You know, and then was, even though he turned a leaf, you know, was pursued by you know, the law.
No, we got it. I remember the whole thing very well. Bruce, because there are so many people behind you, I need you to finish up. Go ahead.
Yeah, the punishment doesn't fit the crime. It's way over.
Yeah.
Even though he may have hit the policeman in the car and he ran away and he made that, he stole those cigarettes, that doesn't mean he should be shot dead. That's it, period.
Okay, and the policeman said that he had approached him, that he had beaten him up, he showed the stuff. I'm just giving you the other side of this thing, and that therefore he was in fear for his life. If he got hit again, he said he was afraid he was going to die. What about that?
Well, you know, how could he be hit again when he was, how many feet away was it when he was shot and he put up his hands?
Yeah, I don't know. And by the way, the policeman then comes back and says, I told him to lie down on the ground and he didn't do it. So,
you know, Alan, I wasn't there.
That's two of us who weren't there. Exactly. That's exactly the point. We weren't there.
Right.
But you make a number of very salient and important points about the relationship between black youth and police officers, and I think we should all think about that. Bruce, I got to let you go. Thank you very much for calling.
Bye bye.
Bye. Let's go to Kevin in Hobart. Kevin, you're on.
Hi. How you doing?
So far, okay.
Very intelligent conversation, great callers today. Everybody is really right on with their comments and questions. I'm a person who's a felon. I was made a felon for a nonviolent drug crime. I've been through poverty and destitution. And I just wanted to make the comment of, you know, people see it on TV, the riots and breaking into liquor stores. That is desperation. That is what it feels like to be desperate, where you just don't care what people think anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you're just willing to do whatever it does, whatever it takes to forget for just a short period of time how miserable your life is.
By the way, Kevin, I understand what you're saying. I truly understand what you're saying. You're not the first one to say it to me. But I want to ask you a question. Do you think there are any people who just become opportunists and take advantage of a situation?
Absolutely.
I was looking at the people they didn't look like desperate people to me, who were brazenly carrying out box after box after box in that.
And I know, and I saw the same videos too, and it's we're not in their place, so we can't really say what they've been through in their lives. But I've been through some tough things, and I've done some bad things in my life, too.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean I deserve to be shot.
No,
and
indeed.
I don't think it would happen up here where I live. But in an inner city area, quick to shoot.
Even if you were black, Kevin, you don't think it would happen in Hobart, around Hobart?
No, absolutely not.
And why is that?
Because the police.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think the police in the inner city areas are just so trigger happy. They've been bred to be afraid of the communities they're policing, and it is black cops as well as white cops.
Sure,
it is the institutionalized racism. They're taught to fear the people they're supposed to protect, and screaming directions in someone's face, having been through it myself, makes a person afraid and quick to either fight or flight. And sometimes the person's not going to react in a way that makes sense
Kevin,
to the rest of us watching it on TV.
Kevin, great call. And I very much appreciate your making
it. Well, thank you,
Alan. Really. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye.
Let's go to Jake in Albany. Jake, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
Hi. Well, the comment I just wanted to make is that, you know, the term that gets thrown a lot, around a lot is people talk about white privilege. And I think the example that you can really look at here is, you know, as a white person, I have every reason to be angry about this verdict. But I feel like as a black person, you should not only just be angry about this verdict, but you should be terrified. And I think that really speaks to, like, what the dynamics in this country are right now. And it's just, it's unsettling almost.
You know, Jake, there was a sign. First of all, your cell phone reception is lousy. But secondly, I have to tell you that there was one sign that really caught my eye yesterday as I was watching it. And somebody had a big sign that said, "Not one more." I think it goes to your point.
Yep. And I think you're totally on point there, Alan. I think, you know, it goes to say, you never hear about a black cop getting away with killing a young white boy. And I think that's really, it speaks to a lot of how this country's racism still really affects our day-to-day lives.
Well, there is no question that this country has its quota of racism. Of that, I would go to the end of the world to agree with. But I have to tell you, it's an interesting case in that it's he said, and you know, it's he said because one person's dead and doesn't really have a chance to say it. But assuming, is there any possibility in your mind that the cop really was endangered?
Well, look, I mean, you said a couple times all today that we weren't there. But what I do have to say is if this boy was white, he would have gotten a trial and this would have gone to trial. And I think, you know, it's good to say we might have not been there, but had he been white, we would have had a trial.
Well, there will be people who call up right now and are going to say, "No, Jake was wrong. If he was white, he would have gotten off faster than this guy did." You know, so I don't know. Hey, Jake, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving,
you
Alan.
You too. Let's go to Matthew in Beacon. Okay, Matthew, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
I'm just calling. I actually grew up in Southern California.
Yep.
And honestly, the comparisons to Rodney King, I don't know if they're appropriate. The comparison I think we should be making is the comparison to the Watts riots of the late 60s.
Yep. Where a lot of people died, unlike now.
Yeah. Yes, and, you know, but that was also caused by, I don't want to say an overreaction, because, again, I wasn't there. It's kind of before my time. But, you know, of a cop shooting a mostly unarmed person, that sparked, what was it, a couple of weeks of riots?
Yeah, no. They really beat that guy. It was. I remembered as if it were yesterday. So your comparison to Watts is what exactly? What should we take away from your call?
That there's really two options that the Ferguson Police Department has. You know, you have a mostly white police force with a couple of token minorities on it, going up against a community that is, I don't remember the percentage, but is mostly black. And you can go the way the LAPD route went, which was to completely militarize the situation, which resulted in, you know, untold numbers of deaths. Or we could work on some form of de-escalation. But
Matthew. Don't you think that the fact that there was no pushback by the cops, you know, somebody called and said, well, they were on the other side of town. I don't go with that
right.
one. That there was none, that there was a philosophy here is, you know, buildings burning aren't as bad as our killing people. And that may be an evolution in this country.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm very pleased at that, especially considering the first riots we watched where we had the officers swearing at the people on camera and blocking out the media and escorting journalists out. So this is an improvement, but I'm honestly terrified that this could go much worse.
Not if you owned one of those stores. And not if you were a black person owning one of those stores.
That's certainly true.
Hey, Matthew, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Let's go to Terry in, where are you calling from, Terry?
Armenia.
Armenia. Uh-huh. I know it well. Go ahead.
In all the people that have called in earlier, I haven't heard anyone talk about giving any credit to the grand jury. I got to believe that this was 12 reasonable adult people.
Including three...
I don't know that for a fact, but I got to believe that's the case.
Well,
it was 12
including
reasonable
three,
people.
Three people of color, yeah.
I don't care what the color was. I got to believe these were 12 people who are reasonable people. There's objections from both sides as to whether they're on the jury.
Yep.
Both sides chose these 12 people, and they looked at the facts, at which were in some cases in contradiction to some of the witness statements, and they know everything that took place there with the evidence that was given to them.
Now, Terry, how do you know how they choose a grand jury? In, because, you know, grand juries consider more than one case often, right? So when you say both sides were there, quite frequently the grand jury is a sort of a, you know, now I don't know whether a special grand jury was empowered for this. It certainly is possible. But grand juries, it's not like the voir dire for a regular jury trial, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I got to believe that the 12 people that were chosen were probably reasonable people.
Okay, fair enough.
That's my point.
Fair enough. And I thank you for making that point because, you know, it could not have been an easy task for that grand jury.
Of course it wasn't.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they knew they have the possibility that names leak out, that people get angry, you know, that kind of thing. That kind of thing happens. Terry, I'm so sorry not to give you more time, but we really do have to take a break. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
We'll take a little break. We'll be right back. Stay right there.
Support comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 275 flavors of handcrafted, dairy, and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. The Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care. CECAA.com. Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. Carrie Haddad Gallery, presenting landscapes by Jane Bloodgood Abrams and Dan Roop, and paintings of male athletes by Bruce Sargent through December 14th. Open daily, carriehaddadgallery.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people. nature.org/Adirondacks. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working to permanently preserve the natural, scenic, and recreational resources of the Lake George region since 1988. lglc.org.
And we are back thanks to our magnificent Zachary, who keeps us from going down the wrong way. Okay, let's go to Chris in Saratoga. Chris, you're in the lightning round. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
So far, so good. Go.
All right, good. All right, anyways, hey, look, I just wanted to tell you, it's mostly, like, talking about the institutionalized racism.
Right.
All right. So, anyways, I used to teach and all that stuff, and let me tell you, it was horrible seeing the racism within the system, and that children learn from a very early age that people get treated differently just based on the color of their skin.
Right.
Now, when I was teaching in the high school, and I witnessed this. I was in the classroom, you know, 100% of the way.
Where was it, Chris?
I don't want to say, but it's. Because,
it means so much.
Troy High School.
Okay, gotcha. Go ahead.
So it was at Troy High School. Swear to God, this is a true story. This teacher threw this girl out of the classroom because she was on her phone. However, she was, you know, she got done taking a quiz. Quiz was already handed in. She was on her phone, you know, reading something. Anyways, so the guy went ahead and wrote her up and kicked her out of class. She was gone for a couple of days afterwards. Anyways, and then I went through a couple of tests myself, and I found out that these two students plagiarized one another. I brought it up to them.
Chris, yeah, go ahead. Finish up. Go ahead.
Okay. And I brought it up to my mentor at the time, and I said, hey, look, you know, this isn't right. Look what he, you know, these two students cheated off one another. And he's like, I guess you got to give him a zero. And I said, what do you mean? This is grounds for expulsion. This is blatant plagiarism.
Yeah.
And he just left it at that. He was like, oh, I guess we got to give him a zero. And I was like, wait a minute. You are going to throw this girl out for being on her phone because she could potentially cheat. But when I catch two students, white students, doing it, you just, you know, brush it off and say, give them a zero?
Okay, and the end of the story is, Chris?
And the end of the story is that people do get treated differently based on race.
You started with that premise. You were right when you started it. And it is something that every one of us has to look at ourselves with to make sure that we're, because on some level, I mean, if you look into your psyche and you think about walking down the street and you think about things that you see and do, you couldn't be more right. And Chris, I want to thank you for this call because it's an important one. Appreciate it very much. Let's go to Olivia in Schenectady. Olivia, you're on.
Hi, Alan.
Hey.
I'm calling because I wanted to say that this is a problem with police in general. There are countless cases of white people being gunned down. We know about New Mexico. I also found out that in Utah, 15% of the homicides in the state are attributed to police officers. And these are white people, you know.
Do you mean homicides?
Not always black people.
Do you mean homicides?
Or people of color.
Do you mean homicides?
Said 15%.
No, I'm asking a question, Olivia. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. Do you mean homicides or deaths?
I would say homicides. This is like in the line of duty.
Are committing homicides? Cops, 15%
well,
of the cops are...
I mean, they're in the line of duty. You know, they're responding to calls. You know, there are more people that are getting shot than arrested. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do, and I read the same figures. But are you sure you want to use the word homicides?
Well, maybe the wording isn't appropriate, but you know what I'm saying. Like, the person is dead before they're in handcuffs.
Yeah. No, I know.
Basically what I'm saying.
I get it.
You know what I mean? So
yes.
I think we got to look at this whole thing as a whole. There are plenty of, you know, not to take away from Michael Brown or anything else. That's a serious problem. I'm a person of color. I've grown up in urban areas. I've never had problems with police, but we definitely need to, we need to look at this as a whole. Because there are other cases that are not getting attention. You know, we've got a serious problem with our police force, and I think it's gotten worse. And I think they are being instructed and taught certain things. I think our police forces are being a lot more militarized. And nobody is really safe. Nobody is really safe. We have black officers that have killed white people recently, like this year. You know, people have brought it up as side notes, but it's like, you know... This is a problem for everybody.
So what is so as a black woman in basically a community that is mixed but has more whites, right, than in Schenectady than blacks.
That's right.
What is it like? I mean, what's it like to look at the television, see this going on, see the protests? What are you, what are you and feeling about this as an individual and as a member of a community?
I'm enraged, partly desensitized. You know, I grew up through a lot of that, the Rodney King. I was in middle school. I'm kind of desensitized. You know, I'm looking at the facts of it. It's enraging, but you know, this problem is so big, and I don't know how to feel. I feel lucky that I'm not a male, because if I was a male, I'd be a bigger. I know for a fact I'd be a bigger target, and I'm sure the audience, you know, we all get that. Like, this is like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just I'm lucky that I'm a female, because I think my experiences would be a lot different, whether it's driving down the road or. You know what I mean? As far as tickets
kids?
And stuff like that, I feel intimidated. I do.
Olivia, do you have kids?
No.
Uh-huh.
Thank God. Because I'd be worried about my sons.
Of course. Olivia, I love your call. Thank you so much for making it.
Thank you.
Yeah, right.
Bye.
Bye. Let's go to John in Burnt Hills, 1-800-348-2551. We got a couple of free phones now, and I'm going to try to get everybody in. John, go.
Hi, Alan. I just wanted to comment on a couple of things. One, if you're able to go back to the timing of the release of doing it on a Monday night versus some other times, I'd love to hear a little more of your thoughts on that. I do want to get back to the institutional racism just for a second, because at some point, whether it's Do the Right Thing in the 1980s or Rodney King in the 90s or, you know, Ferguson from now, at what point do we stop hitting the snooze button and really get around to a more of a systematic approach? And I speak as a, I'm on a board of education. We think about the apartheid-like education system where those who can go to suburban schools, those who can't go to other schools, and how do we get away from the institutionalism of racism? How do we get to really focusing on it the way we have been with other minorities and really create more of an equal opportunity platform?
Do you have any answers?
I do have some. And I think it has to do with how do we go about early on with creating the same educational opportunities so that folks can participate in the society in an equal fashion.
Yeah.
Some of the training mechanisms about how we engage in these situations when there is a life-threatening situation on both sides, whether the officer felt threatened, whether the youth felt threatened. How do we avert having somebody die out of that? There has to be better options.
Okay.
And then finally, how do we go about at every opportunity? How do we have our decision making point towards? How does this lead towards more equality versus less equality? Thank you.
And thank you. Appreciate it very much. And on your first question, John, I have no idea why they chose to release it at then. None.
Understood.
It seems so counterintuitive, but what can I tell you? Thanks a lot. Yeah.
All right. Cheers.
Right. Let's go to Joanne in Del Mar. Joanne in Del Mar, you're on.
Hi, Alan. I hope I'm not being redundant here. My one thought is I listened to an earlier caller and the exchange with regard to the cop feeling the police officer feeling unsafe and perhaps feeling threatened. What I keep going back to in my mind, and this is where I hope I'm not redundant, is that in a police officer training, that in a situation like this with an unarmed individual, there is nothing in the training short of shooting multiple times to death. That's the part that is so unfathomable to me. Secondly, I would simply say that I grew up in the 60s, and I watched very little because it's just so difficult to watch all of it. And this is, you know, this is several that we've seen. I'm watching what was going on and really had deja vu of watching what was going on in the 60s when I was in my middle school years, and that sense of fear and sadness and disbelief was a feeling of deja vu.
Okay, now, Joanne, your cell phone is not real good.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Don't worry about it. I just want you to know that different police departments have different training systems, but if there is to be a silver lining in this, there are two things that occur to me. Number one, there were no deaths that other than Michael Brown's that came out of this, whereas in Watts, as I said before, there were a lot of deaths. Number two, I think policemen now have a message that has been sent to them, which is you had better be very, very careful because there's an accountability that's going to happen that's in the future. Now, people will call up and say, no, Alan, don't you understand he got off? I don't think so. I think when the cop in the stairwell in the project who just shot this innocent man, he said, oh, my, as soon as I did that, I knew I was in real trouble. So I think there may be a different kind of message going out, Joanne. I hope I'm right.
Thanks
for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Walt in Colony. Walt, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Listening to everybody and having just previously heard that left wing presenter before.
Yeah. Right.
And her discussion of racism and so on. AR. Anyway, one of the things that keep going through my mind is this is part of the gun problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in England.
But Walt, Michael did not have, Brown did not have a gun.
No, I know it, but the cop did.
Oh, see, so you would have the cops disarmed?
Yeah.
Okay, good point.
And you know, I mean, that sounds like a, I don't know. I mean, probably just sounds absurd because, you know, we have so many instances where police officers are
shot.
You know, are shot, or that there is a gun battle, or whatever. But it's again, it's the you know, the creation of a culture.
Hey, Walt, you made your point. It's a good one, but I really want to try to finish up here. Thank you very much.
All right,
all right,
sure.
Good. Bye. And let's go to Laura in Saratoga. Laura, we got to really move here. Go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to bring up the point that Michael Brown, he had been shot 5 times, and if the officer Wilson had been really acting in self-defense, I don't know, maybe he should have acted a little less aggressive, and I wonder if they took that into account when they were deciding that that was really what went on, even though none of us were there, but 5 times seems a little excessive, once in the head,
that had to do with his claim that the guy kept coming, that Michael Brown kept coming. But yes, it's a lot. It's a point that has been made by many people, and I thank you for making it again, Laura. Very important. Thanks again. Let's go to Fred in Wineskill. Okay, Fred, we're up against it.
Yeah,
go
well,
ahead.
I'm going to go real quick. I saw the guy talk last night, the prosecutor, and he was talking about that there was evidence that this guy charged a couple times, and in between the officer stopped. This guy had assaulted him in the cop car. And the thing I'm going to come from it is more of not a race situation so much, but and this may go with Trayvon Martin too. I'm seeing a lot of young men acting tough in some situations, and then like this guy charges the cop twice.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's already attacked the cop, and you know it's okay. You know, if you're a young man and you're going to act tough, I it's a shame the guy was shot. Did he deserve to be shot? No. But the thing is, if you do these things and act aggressive and bring yourself into a confrontation, things are going to happen. There's consequences.
I'm going to put a period right there, Fred. It's a very important thing that you're saying, and it's being said by a lot of people. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Ken in Rosendale. Ken, it's got to be fast. Go.
I think part of the problem is a lack of honesty. The reality is that you don't see groups of young Jewish men knocking people out or committing crimes. So, and Al Sharpton, I think, is a race baiter. You know, he's there for Michael Brown, but he wasn't there or being called on the carpet for what happened with Tawana Brawley or being accountable in that sense. So when the underfranchised do not have a voice, people like Al Sharpton get power, and that's just an absolute crime in my eyes. Racism exists, and we should own that. Honestly, we should be honest about it. Racism exists, but the cops also have a right to defend themselves.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate that. Okay, let's go to Regina in Poughkeepsie. Okay, Regina, we're up against it now. You got to be short.
Okay, well, I was thinking the thing that people don't seem to be talking about is that it's beyond just race. It's like a little bit more complicated.
Sure.
We also have to look at power in terms of the police have power. As citizens, we have less power. And the impact of social class.
Sure.
And the social class not of just the victim, but of the neighborhood and the area in which the police are working, and how that also has an impact.
Okay, we have to keep it at that, Regina. We really are out of time. I thank you so much for making that point. We made it earlier in the program, but you're right to make it again. Thanks again. All right, we're just about out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to Ann in New Paltz, who we left on the line. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Kid Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient, net-zero, passive house, home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations, serving Western Massachusetts, Kent Hicks, Construction.com, Maria College, Albany, hosting an information center this Saturday from 10 to noon with information about 4- and 2-year degrees in occupational therapy, management, paralegal, and liberal arts, and more. Aspire, achieve, become MariaCollege.edu. And H. House and Son, True Value Hardware Woodstock, locally owned since 1932, offering holiday decorations and gifts for kitchen, workshops, and home. Behind every
project is a true value. HHoust.com. And Hudson Wine Merchants, Hudson, New York, celebrating 10 years of wine and food in the Hudson Valley. Raise your glass, HudsonWineMerchants.com. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WMC.org/VoxPop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.